A very good afternoon, Namibia, and from wherever you're tuning in from, whether it's from the red sands of the Kalahari to the misty shores of Swakopmund, or from the quiet hills of Opuwo to the wide open plains of Omaheke, and right here in the heartbeat of Windhoek, a very warm good afternoon to you, wherever you are and whomever you're tuning in. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and I'll be your storyteller and your Monday motivator right here on Eagle FM, keeping you company up until 14:30. Now it's Monday, the 13th of October, 2025, and that means a brand new week, a fresh canvas, and a whole lot of stories waiting to unfold. Mondays are like reset button, a chance to refocus, recharge, and remind ourselves that every small step counts towards something bigger. Now you're currently tuned into On The Reader News Analysis, the show where headlines meet heartlines. We go beyond the heartbreaking news to unpack the meaning, the moment, and the movement behind Namibia's biggest stories. Now remember, this conversation belongs to all of us. So do share your voice, your views, and your vibes on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp, or drop a message via Eagle FM. Ensure that you do tune in via Eagle FM app or Eagle FM website, because here on The Reader, your perspective doesn't just join the dialogue, it defines it. Now, whether you're kicking in on the week from Otavi, taking a lunch break in Walvis Bay, running errands in Gobabis, or chilling with a cold drink in Katimamururo, thank you for choosing Eagle FM as your Monday companion. Stay tuned. Now let's jump right into today's top stories. The Ministry of Health and Social Services has launched the Ministerial Strategic Plan for 2025 to 2030 and the Universal Health Coverage Policy Document. The Universal Health Coverage is one of the Sustainable Development Goals, SDG 3. Namibia is aligning with its own vision of 2030 and National Health Policy Frameworks. Health equity and social protection is for many Namibians of significance, and paying for health services can still be a burden. Hence, the universal health coverage policy is intended to help ensure vulnerable populations are not excluded or financially strained. Now, speaking to us is the Ministry of Health and Social Services spokesperson, that is Walter Skamaya. Let's take a listen. A very good afternoon to you, Walter Skamaya, and welcome to On The Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon to you, and thank you for having me here.
What is coming? Kindly walk us through the launch of the Ministerial Strategic Plan for the 2025 to 2030 and the Universal Health Coverage Policy Document.
Yes, thank you very much. The Minister of Health and Social Services, today, the 13th of October 2025, launched our Strategic Plan for 2025, 2026, 2029 to 2030, and the Universal Health Coverage Policy. So what it entails in this policy or the strategic plan? The strategic plan is a way of realigning or a roadmap where we want the ministry to be or what we want to achieve as the Minister of Health and Social Services. As far as the universal health coverage policy is concerned, this is a policy that the ministry has been preaching about, the ministry has been talking about, with the aim or with the intention of seeing to it that nobody suffers the hardship of being retained away on the basis of not having money to be able to access the healthcare services. Yeah, so that's it. And then we looked also that the ministry wants to achieve what we call world-class health for all. When we are talking about world-class health for all, we are talking about how do we go about it that everybody should have access to this health that we are talking about. And then recently we have started talking about the vision April 2026. So this vision, what it entails is that by the year 2026, next year, April, the government intends, or the ministry intends, that all government officials should be able to go to public health facilities. And then we are looking at the standard, that those standards should be as good as that they can even accommodate everyone, and then it should be good for everyone, not only for VIPs, not only for the head of the state, not only for those that have medical aid. But the idea is to see to it that it should be good for everyone to go to those facilities.
Mm. Now, currently, we do have a shortage of staff, especially medical doctors at some clinics. Just not so long ago, I think last week, some clinics were short of some doctors, and therefore, Katutra Health Center primary black chain, known as black chain, had to be very overloaded. How then do we start off, as we're talking about universal health coverage, how do we maybe start off at this platform, ensuring that we have enough doctors, we have enough nurses, just as a starting point?
Yes, thank you for that question. Let me make it clear once and for all. The issue or the language that we have been speaking in the Minister of Health and Social Services is to say that, dear listeners, it's not going to be possible that there is no any health system that does not have challenges. And then when we speak of the shortage, the point that we usually leave aside is based on the structure. If the structure says you should have three doctors, that's what the structure says. And then those three doctors are there on the structure. Where is the shortage? Because the public used to say that when we wake up one day and then we have a high number that has turned up to a facility, and then that number outweighs the doctors who are on the shift, we say that we are lacking of doctors. For us, the issue of lack of doctors, we speak about it based on the structure, based on the establishment. So each and every health facility, it should have two or three doctors. But if we speak about blockchain, this is a doctor. Blockchain, this is a facility, it's a health center that has more than doctors, that has a good number of doctors compared to a number that a fire health sector doctors should have, a health facility should have. So in other words, the other issue also, we face a challenge of people come and go and, you know, they come, they go. So this movement of people, you know, some people would come, they go for private sectors, they change employment, they change the places of living for some reason, they go open their own practices and so forth. So you might employ today and then later on or tomorrow, people do resign for some reasons.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. Now, when we're talking about universal health coverage, and of course, no one should be left out in terms of health and being treated regardless of them having money or not. Just exactly, what are those particular pointers that have been drawn out in this strategic plan for the year 2025 to 2030 that the ministry has perhaps spoken on that it's going to focus on in order to be able to reach the masses and improve healthcare to the people?
All right, thank you. Let me give the three pillars of the strategy. So pillar number one is people's well-being.
Okay.
This pillar lies and it entails about our mission and the core of the universal health coverage agenda, which focuses on improving maternal, newborn, child, and adolescent health and nutrition. We also want to intensify a disease prevention control effort, expanding on our quality and promotive preventive measures, as well as strengthen our health system. Second pillar is operational excellence. So this one is a way of recognizing that no vision can succeed without a strong system to support it.
Okay.
And then we also want to modernize our health infrastructure, fleet and equipment, also to accelerate our digitalization of our health information system, as well as establish a robust medicine and medical supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
And then where the ministry is equally the ministry also, you know, it's committed to those pillars. Last but not least, the third pillar of the strategy is the talent management, whereby our health workforce is our most valuable asset. And this pillar is dedicated to ensuring that the supported and well-trained and equitably distributed. The universal health coverage policy also underscores the urgency of the addressing the workforce issues around it.
Okay.
Yes, so also by this, also the ministry intends to have a, you know, by the year 2030, our progress should be measured by the results we have achieved, and then the aim is the significantly reduction of the mental and the child mortality, and then as well as also to continue to placing HIV, TB and malaria on a declining path, as well as other diseases.
Okay, that's quite interesting. Now, in terms of, you speak about the well-being of the workforce, of course, of the Ministry of Health, and we have come to realize that doctors and nurses also being overwhelmed sometimes face, they too have their challenges in terms of mental health challenges, maybe because of being, having too much pressure in regards of having to deal with patients or whatnot. Are there perhaps strategies that have been put in place to have workshops or, you know, very deliberate meetings, deliberate get-togethers of health workers on a continuous basis, maybe to just help them in terms of mental well-being, considering we just celebrate 10 October is definitely World Mental Health Day. Are there strategies in place for that? Or maybe talks on the table to look at that?
Yeah, that's a crucial point that you have just made. Cabinet recently approved what we call safe space. Each and every OMAS has been charged now to create that safe space. So creating that safe space, you should have a division, or you should have a space for which you can accommodate the health mental issues, such that when you have that, you can have a space, you can have a place, you can have a room where you can entertain this. In many ministries, government offices and agencies, there is a unit called wellness unit.
Okay.
So this wellness, it should also be encompassed with the mental health issues, that these things should be discussed. These things should be even become an HR issue, that we speak about it. So during the launch, we spoke about that. Let us speak about it. Let us not suffer in silence. So all these things are measures that each and every government ministry should make that space, whereby this provision can be given, this topic, where these topics can be discussed.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you so much, Mr. Walter Skamaya, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
It was a pleasure having you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Now, speaking on this strategic plan for 2025-2030 by the Ministry of Health and Social Services is the Minister of Health and Social Services, Esperance Luvindayo. Let's take a listen to what she said.
What do we want to do? Why do we want to do it? And how are we going to do it? The universal health coverage policy answers the what and the why, and then the strategic plan answers the how, because that's always the question. How do you expect to get this done? The key pillars that were focused on by the ED that I won't go into, pillar one, people's well-being. There, I simply want to highlight the importance of, when we talk about Vision April 2026, and I've said this before and I'll highlight it again. So Vision April 2026 is not focused on ensuring that the minister and the president can use state facilities. When we phrase it that way, we've gotten it completely wrong. Completely wrong. I was at one of the facilities in the region and one of the directors said, no, but you know, we have a VIP section that we've already started. And I said, no, but you missed it. That's not the point. It was supposed to be a VIP room in case the minister gets appendicitis. No. the purpose is supposed to be that, so how do we offer our best if we are not safe? So that speaks to, from a strategic level and from the top, how do we promote the well-being of our people, of our healthcare workers? But by the year 2030, our progress will be measured by results. We will be looking at how we significantly reduce maternal and child mortality. Our efforts with regards to HIV, TB, malaria, how we substantially increase our universal health coverage index, how more Namibians will have access to a broader range of quality health services without financial hardships, supported by modern infrastructure, a functional e-health system, and a well-motivated and equally distributed workforce. Our goal is simple, but it is profound: longer, healthier lives for all people in Namibia. So is this a very bold vision? Yes, it is. It's very bold. But is it impossible? No. So ladies and gentlemen, our development partners have played such a key role in ensuring that we have to stay in it done, and we will get it done. There are things that we have normalized that should not be normalized. I mentioned them now in passing. So when I go into the hospitals and I do these impromptu visits, what are we trying to do? We're not trying to catch people off guard, no. We're trying to see what is the day-to-day status of things. So you shouldn't have to know that the minister is coming for you to fix things, no. Then that means that's not how you operate on a day-to-day basis. And so there are things that we've normalized that this strategic plan emphasizes for us not to normalize. And that's where we're trying to get to. Then pillar three, talent management. The healthcare workers are at the core of everything that we do. If you have a doctor, if you have an intern, an MO, a specialist, if you have a pharmacist, if you have a radiologist, a radiographer, you name it, that is struggling with their mental health, this is not talent management. One of the key issues in the healthcare system, and I'll say it very boldly, is this issue of bullying. And I've heard about it time and time again. We can't get it done, and we will get it done. There are things that we have normalized that should not be normalized. I mentioned them now in passing. So when I go into the hospitals and I do these impromptu visits, what are we trying to do? We're not trying to catch people off guard, no. We're trying to see what is the day-to-day status of things. So you shouldn't have to know that the minister is coming for you to fix things, no. Then that means that's not how you operate on a day-to-day basis. And so there are things that we've normalized that this strategic plan emphasizes for us not to normalize. And that's where we're trying to get to. Then pillar three, talent management. The healthcare workers are at the core of everything that we do. If you have a doctor, if you have an intern, an MO, a specialist, if you have a pharmacist, if you have a radiologist, a radiographer, you name it, that is struggling with their mental health, this is not talent management. One of the key issues in the healthcare system, and I'll say it very boldly, is this issue of bullying. And I've heard about it time and time again. Present to continue to work with us with the rolling out of the HPV vaccine, the WHO, UNICEF, you name it, have all been such critical partners. And we call on them to continue to align with us, to the private sector and civil society. We call for innovative partnerships. When the healthcare sector succeeds, everybody succeeds. Everybody's happier. Everybody's more fulfilled. And so we cannot view this as just a public sector issue. We must remember that both public and private benefit when the public system is stabilized. Then to the community and the traditional leaders.
Okay, and there you had it from Walter Skamaya and the Minister of Health and Social Services, Esperanza Luvinda, talking about the universal health coverage policy and the strategic, the ministry's strategic plan for 2025 to 2030. And one of the key highlights that I would pick up from there is how they speak about the government hospitals or government facilities being able to cater to the ministers or executive directors or people who normally wouldn't come there because obviously they have medical aids to be able to cover for themselves to go to private sectors. But then the question still remains, and Walter Skamaya did speak about it being trying them working on obviously the facilities being ready by April 2026. Now, I think as much as they speak about visions and goals that are being bold and whatnot, 2026 seems a little bit too close. I mean, we are just now in October 2025 and very soon we'll be in April 2026, not so far. What exactly is the ministry putting on the table? What tangible place, not just plan, but what tangible action are they putting in place to ensure that the health facilities are up to standard as it is now? Obviously, Blockchain is one of the facilities that has now elevated Katra Health Hospital, but it still gets very overcrowded and somebody can go there even in the afternoon and come back in the evening. And are we saying that we are ready to have ministers or executive directors in the queue for that long? Of course, I know that the intention is to help health facilities to be on standard or on par with those of private hospital, but isn't that a bit of an ambitious goal? Is that something really that we are able to speak about now? Because maybe we can talk about a couple of years from now, maybe trying to bring it to that level. But looking at the way things are right now and how things are happening at the moment with the way of government hospitals, we do tend to see how the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund is trying to bring it, of course, bring in the machineries to help, and of course also to help them save the money in having to send their patients, to private hospitals and have to pay all this much money, but then rather bringing in the machinery to help cater for the people right there. At the first point of contact, that is government hospitals, in case somebody has been involved in a motor vehicle accident. But beyond that, what else is it that we are seeing that is being put on the table for the ministry to be able to actually reach this goal that it's talking about? Is that something that is really possible as it is now? What about the maternity hospitals that a lot of pregnant women go there and of course come and encounter certain things, and especially for a first time mother who is now seeing and who sometimes goes without support, without somebody to help them? Is this something that really is tangible? I mean, it's very easy to speak about goals and ambitious goals that we are able to achieve or apparently able to achieve, but I'm not just trying to be a critic right here, but I'm talking about that which is on ground. When one visits Katutura State Hospital, one visits other health facilities. Just recently, and I did ask Walter Skamaya, and he says, you talk about shortage in terms of them referring to a shortage is when the three doctors that have been delegated or been appointed to be there, and perhaps them not being there. But if they are there and then the facilities overcrowded, then they don't consider that as a shortage. But then for the layperson, for the patient who's on the outside, then sees it as a health facility being shut off of those who are supposed to serve him. Because when a clinic doesn't have the people, enough people to help to care for them on time so that they can go back to attend to other duties, then we see that as a shortage of employees, as a shortage of nurses, a shortage of healthcare workers. We see that as a shortage, as much as it's not defined as such, perhaps in their books. But that's something that really, how do we then hold the ministry accountable to what it says to us in terms of the policies that they give to us? How do we then, I think that's collectively coming together to us as patients to say, how then, as much as we can obviously complain and say, but we are not appreciative of this and that, how then do we do that? And also, perhaps, how then do also the community in teams where they want to help in particular areas to help elevate some pressure from the ministry. How are they actually able to do that? Where do they go to be able to do this? I think some of the questions that really we ought to be asking and maybe getting answers to. But nonetheless, this is on the Radar News Analysis. We're talking about the universal health coverage and the ministry's strategic goal for 2025 to 2030 that it launched today. But for now, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with yet more right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM. The Eagle FM lets you express your
Welcome back. The Parliament Standing Committee on Education, Youth, Civic Affairs and Community Development has commenced an inspection tour in the Erongo region in order to assess the condition of schools and youth development facilities. Now, the oversight visit began at Matutura Primary School in Swakopmund, where committee members raised concerns over construction flaws that have negatively impacted the school's operations and learning environment. Now, the delegation also toured the Swakopmund Multipurpose Youth Center, where they engage with management and youth representatives on ongoing program funding challenges and the need for sustained support in order to ensure the center's continued impact. Now, according to the committee, the visits form part of the Parliament's broader efforts to strengthen education delivery and promote youth empowerment across Namibia. The inspection will continue to other parts of the Erongo region in the coming days. Now, let's take a listen to the ministry, the Parliament's Standing Committee, as it speaks on this.
The Parliamentary Standing Committee on Education, Youth, Civic Affairs and Community Development has kicked off its inspection tour in the Erongo region, assessing the state of schools and youth facilities. Starting at Matutura Primary School in Swakopmund, the committee noted construction flaws affecting the school's operations, while also visiting the Swakopmund Multipurpose Youth Center, which faces program funding challenges. The principal at Matutura Primary School noted that despite its modern infrastructure, the school is grappling with a range of construction defects, including leaking taps, faulty gutters, and unevenly leveled grounds, issues that have affected the school's functionality and safety. The visits form part of Parliament's efforts to strengthen education delivery and youth development across all regions.
Doors were stolen. That gate on the ground, this gate on the ground, toilets, things were vandalized. We have decided this school is given to us. We cannot compromise, and you cannot allow a toilet not to have a door. I believe, and this must be the message that you should take home with, when a school is built, protection must be number one. I was informed this school has been without security for the whole year of 2024. And that is how the things were stolen. There was no security 2024. Security was paid up until 2023. And when they were not receiving any money, they removed their personnel. And I don't even know whether the regional office was aware that the personnel of the securities were removed. And because the school has a capacity of 1,353 learners. And I was informed the school was built to accommodate less than 1,000. We had a struggle with the ablution facilities. Such number of learners, they are using 12 toilets, which is very low. And the school had only two cleaners. And then I had to go to the school board. Can't we tell the community to volunteer? There are people out there who would want to assist. Because the school is dirty, the ablution facilities are cleaned twice a day to accommodate, because we have a platoon system, to accommodate the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Then the community came, so we have four volunteers.
You guys are extremely privileged to have these facilities. And if in 5 years this place is vandalized, then it's your failure. We've seen a lot of schools, and all of those schools were once new schools. And I think we need to instill ownership in these schools so that people can take care of the infrastructure. And you're extremely privileged, and it's refreshing to see a new school of this state.
On the issue of what our chair indicated on the structural integrity of your building, it speaks to poor workmanship, and it's a common challenge that we have observed right throughout, and as chair indicated, it's something that we will take up seriously. But mine was just to say that we are inspired by the passion that we can hear from yourself as a principal, to say that you are not alone. We are here as a parliamentary committee to take back some of the issues that you have given to us as parliamentarians, because it's not only for the benefit of Matutura Primary, but I think overall poor workmanship is something that must be dealt with, because quality standards compromises on the safety of our learners and our teachers. So mine was really just to say, Chair, through you, as I give back the platform, that it has really inspired me personally to hear that you are not relying on government resources alone to make education work, that you are bringing on the community, you are bringing on the parents, insofar as getting volunteers. For me, that is something positive that's stood out.
The inspection also continued to other parts of the region, such as Karibeb, Tubuses, and Usakos, as part of Parliament's broader mandate to strengthen service delivery in the education and youth sectors.
Harry Post here now. Take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back with more right here on the Reader News Analysis. Now, should you be interested in being part of the news analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. We'll see you after the commercial break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano akupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka akukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatuimwe bali heari nola natu heari bali no heari ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. In other news, the Parliament Standing Committee on Education has been informed of severe infrastructure challenges at Sao Nyema Junior Primary School in the Kavango East region after recent strong winds blew the roofs off the school's administration block and two classrooms. Now, during the committee's oversight visit this morning to capital projects under the Ministry of Education, school principal Regina Haingura highlighted the dire state of facilities, noting that the school currently has 34 classrooms, far below what is needed to accommodate its 1,777 learners. Ngura explained that due to limited classroom space, the school has been forced to operate on a double session system, with some learners attending classes in the morning and others in the afternoon. She added that while four new classrooms are currently under construction, though assistance from the Japanese embassy, the school still requires at least 12 additional classrooms to ensure that all learners can attend lessons during the morning hours. Now, the committee's visit forms part of Parliament's ongoing efforts to monitor education infrastructure projects and address challenges affecting learner conditions across the country. Speaking to us on this matter is our reporter, Anakleta Haikara. Haikara, let's take a listen.
Good afternoon, Happy, and to all the Eagle FM listeners.
Now, I understand that Parliament Standing Committee on Education is visiting capital projects under the Ministry of Education, one of them being Sao Nyema Junior Primary School. Kindly walk us through what actually has been the foundings by the Parliament Standing Committee, and what are the teachers themselves saying?
So far, we just visited two schools, that is the Sao Nyema Combined School and the Ndiona Project School, which is in the Ndiona constituency. And they are just actually familiarizing themselves with these schools just to see what is really happening. Now, this morning, when we went to the Sao Nyema Junior Primary School, the principal, Regina Haingura, explained that the school currently has 34 classrooms, which are not enough to accommodate the 1,777 learners. In this, as we speak right now, some learners attend classes during the day, while other learners attend classes in the afternoon. And she narrated that this leaves some of the children tired and hungry during the day. And she further also noted that although four classes are under construction with the support from the Japanese embassy, the school still needs at least 12 additional classrooms to ensure that all learners can attend school in the morning section. So this is what she said. And the parliamentary standing committees will further visit schools like Pikiniki Primary School, Edward Muhongo Secondary School, and Muchiku JP School in the Divundu area. So far, we have just seen two schools, and we are visiting two other schools.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Is it something that is common by the Parliament Standing Committee on Education to visit schools? Is it something that is, or is just something that is recently coming up?
I remember again in early September, they came to visit schools within the Rundu circuit itself, that were mainly Rundu Project School. What they normally do is the visit is just to familiarize themselves with the budget that is given to this specific school so that they can see what is really happening with the schools. So they also want to evaluate whether the Ministry of Education is doing the best interest to the people, or these people that are receiving the budget are not doing anything with the money. So seeing at some of the schools that we, like I said, the two schools that we have visited so far today, you can really see that the projects are moving. Looking at the school that we are now currently at, which is now the Ndiona Project School, the school is not yet completed, but then as we speak right now, they are still looking into it to see why the school has not yet been completed, why is there no administration block, but there are at least four classrooms that were already being built. So the school was supposed to accommodate more than 300 learners, but for the four classrooms, the school, the learners will not fit. Because now if you think of 300 learners with the four classrooms, how many learners are going to be in the class? Obviously, they will be overcrowded. So now they are looking forward to have more classrooms. But as we were speaking to the Andiona inspector, he narrated that the reason why there was only four classrooms built is because the people at the area did not want to give up their plots for the other classes to be completed because they wanted to be compensated. But in the meantime, if they are going to be compensated, then they will give land so that the school can be built.
Mm-hmm. I think that's only fair enough that they be compensated for their land, not so.
Exactly.
Mm. So the school is currently having about 1,777 learners with only 34 classrooms as of present.
Yeah. This is now the Sawyama Junior Primary School.
Mm-hmm. And the condition of the school overall, how are those classrooms, Anakleta? Are they up to standard? Just exactly how is the condition of the school? And does the school also have a school hostel?
So far, I was also surprised when I entered the school. For the first time, I could see a school that does not have littering. The school was quite clean, except for the administration block and two other classrooms that were blown off. The roofs were blown off by the wind. Looking at the environment of the learners in the classes, it's very suitable because you find in a class there are at least 36 learners, which is the learner and teacher ratio. So really it means a lot. But then just the fact that some other learners have to attend school during the afternoon, this makes it even more not nice because, you know, like the principal was saying, some kids comes very tired. And I know as a learner that also was in school, I know how it feels when it's already 1 o'clock. Imagine now you are told to go to school at 1 while you are already tired, even though you were at home. Yeah.
And most, and the other thing is that when kids are actually at home, they're not just sitting idle, but the parents actually make use of them to send them around on errands and stuff like that. So really, it's more ideal for the kids to go to school in the morning than in the afternoon.
Yeah. And you spoke about the hostel. So far there is just no hostel at the school because most of the learners comes from the surrounding area. So most of the learners are just from Sawyama itself and Kasote. So there is indeed no hostel at the school. But the school is in good hands. The teachers are really taking good care of the school. They are staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Taking good care of the school. They are staff members that cleaners that are just looking at the environment of the school is very clean and neat. Just like I say earlier that it was one of the first school I went to and did not see any littering or papers lying around.
Mm.
It was just neat and up to standard.
Mm. And I understand that you still have other schools that you ought to visit still alongside the Parliament Standing Committee?
Mm-hmm, exactly. So we have three schools, which is Bikiniki Primary School, Edward Mohongo Secondary School, and Muchiku JP School, that is now situated in the Mukwe constituency.
Okay. Anakleta Akira, thank you so much for making time for us right here.
You're welcome.
Okay. And with that, we pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is on the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned. We'll be back with more.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. A group of Katatura residents took a drastic measure to express their frustration with the City of Windhoek services by dumping sewage in front of the Katatura Customer Center branch. Now, this act of desperation highlights the growing discontent among residents regarding the city's waste management and service delivery. Joining us to dig deeper into this more is Sean Garisap. Good afternoon, Sean, and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis.
Good afternoon.
Mm. Sean, I'm quite puzzled to say, of course, I know that the residents of Katatura have been very frustrated with the way City of Windhoek has been, I think, handling things for them. But a move of this today, kindly get into it, what transpired and what really pushed the residents to go that far?
No, if you look at what we've been sharing through social media in the past 2-3 weeks, it's been spillage. It's been this drain waste in an area of Katatura Central, which is called Eiland, is Namatin. It's not very far from the original councillor's office.
Okay.
We've been sharing this footage, and we've been sharing letters that we've been writing to the City of Windhoek to address the issue. City of Windhoek, in fact, we have even spoken directly to the mayor in meetings that they have addressed us to say that this issue is a health issue. This mm-hmm. issue is an issue that needs to be assisted, because when this drainage, these drain spills happen, people cannot eat for 3 days. People cannot do anything. They cannot even use the toilet facilities when this water is sitting in their yards, in their sitting rooms. And also, if that is not enough, the raining season is coming. The people are simply demanding, deepen this river, clean the river, and fix the drains. That's all. But the City of Windhoek has been ignoring us. We even told them, it's on record to say that if you do not do any action, we will come to your offices. We are notifying you that we will come the 13th, and we will come and make you have a taste of what we are going through. That's what we told them. It's on record. We even informed the police to say that we are going to take this kind of action. What these people do is they are used to thinking that, these people are just from Katatura. We will not do anything about it. That's what they are doing. This is something that could have been done differently had they taken the plight of the people seriously.
Mm. Now, following this action, what did the City of Windhoek actually respond to the residents, to the frustrated residents of Katatura, in response of what obviously transpired today?
While we were on site, we were told by those that were at home that the City of Windhoek people were there. They were assessing the area. Some of them were at UN Plaza. You know, this stinking smell goes through UN Plaza. Mm. When you are having, I don't even know why they continue having meetings. The other day I was WhatsApping the minister to say, when you are having something, they just get the smell. So they were assessing the situation there, and I don't know how you are only assessing a situation where people have been complaining for 5 years. But what we are getting from their responses to media houses is that they are more concentrated on the fact that we went to give them a taste of what we are going through, as opposed to sorting the problem at hand. They were more concerned about cleaning up that place. There were about 10 police vehicles there. There were some police officers who came late, who started harassing us, threatening us that they will arrest us. And we were just looking at them and wondering, why do you respond to these kinds of things? Why you can simply respond to the call that the people have? I mean, that spillage happens every 3 days. It can happen tomorrow again. So City of Windhoek's response is always that they always defend themselves. They are never wrong. They are never objective about things. They always first want to make it seem as if we do this to make them look bad. But if you go and see on record, what we have is we have given them enough chance. Even their PRO department sometimes is not put abreast with what we have written and what we have requested. And then they say we have not followed the right channels. But the correspondence clearly show that we have asked for audience. We have told them. We have even proposed. We have proposed so many things to them that they have moved the skip, because there was a skip that they were burning. And we are sitting with 6 children that their health has been affected because of the situation caused by them. So we are waiting for them to take the action that they want to take against us who went there, the residents, and obviously me as an activist who led the residents. We will welcome any resolution that is taken, because we are looking for people to hold accountable for the health situation that they have put these people through in. So when they take the resolution, they will just make our legal proceedings very easy.
Okay. Sean Garisop, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. Okay. And there you had it, just getting aside off the story from the horse's mouth itself on why such a drastic move was necessary. But nonetheless, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for economic indicators. US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 30 cents. That is 17 Namibian dollars and 30 cents. €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars, 0.06 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars, 0.07 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 26 cents. €1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 52 cents. €1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 29 cents. Now moving over to trading economics. Meanwhile, for trading economics, India's consumer price inflation eased to 1.5% 2.54% in September 2025. That is down from 2.07% in August and below market expectations of 1.7%. Now, this marked the lowest rate since June 2017 and fell below the Reserve Bank of India's 2% lower tolerance limit under its inflation targeting framework. Now, food prices, which account for nearly half of CPI basket, dropped 2.28%, marking the largest decline since a record of 2.65% fell in December 2018. Meanwhile, Germany's 10-year bond yield inched up to 2.64% on Monday, staying near its lowest level since September 8, as investors closely watch political developments in France and ongoing U.S.-China trade tensions. Now, in France, Sébastien Lecornu, the nation's fifth prime minister in 2 years, resigned last Monday, only to be reappointed on Friday. He now faces a narrow path to political survival ahead of Monday's draft budget bill deadline. To secure its passage through a fragmented parliament, Lecornu is seeking to persuade both the socialist and center-right publicans to either abstain or provide conditional support in the pivotal budget role. Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump adopted a more conciliatory stance toward China on Sunday, just 2 days after threatening 100% tariffs on Chinese imports in response to Beijing's tightening of export controls on the rare earth materials. Now, on the monetary policy front, markets priced in about 55% chance of a 25 basis point CBP rate cut by July 2026. Meanwhile, on agricultural commodities, today's top commodity loser is rice at -1.88% and palm oil at -1.25%. Gains in this category are led by cotton at 0.60%. On metal commodities, the top commodity gainers are copper at 3.68%, platinum at 3.50%, silver at 2.53%, and gold at 1.50%. The biggest losers being steel rebar at -0.78% and lithium carbonate at -0.61%. That's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. We pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwefu tite opoye ekukurile Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipi konu konda doi inawa Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushe njife nawa nokumona oijago ili nawa Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM VI
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression.
Now for news beyond the borders, we're starting off in South Africa, where the acting EMPD police chief is linked to crime syndicate scandal. Let's take a listen.
of KZN Police Commissioner Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi at the Madlanga Commission has landed a number of high-ranking police officials in hot water, including acting EMPD Police Chief Brigadier Julius Mkhwanazi. According to a confidential IPED document from 2023 that was leaked to the SABC, Julius Mkhwanazi came under investigation following allegations of his alleged links to controversial businessman Vusimuzi Katmatlala. According to the document, four vehicles which were registered under the city of Ekurhuleni changed ownership on the e-native system from the city's fleet and were registered as CAT VIP vehicles in March 2023. It was further alleged that those vehicles were fitted with blue lights. Specialist investigator Mike Polhais says Julius Mkhwanazi wasn't taken to task at the time due to high-profile interference into the initial investigation.
Now, if we look at Julius Mkhwanazi, the complaints and cases has been brought against him for quite some time, and you can clearly see there's been an interference by other authorities and some of the very authorities that are presently part of the hearing.
In the document, the police watchdog IPED detailed how it had a strong case against Julius Mkhwanazi as he acted with full intent of corruption. Despite these damning findings, Julius Mkhwanazi still remains a high-ranking member of the EMPD. Bolle says he believes that this is due to his links to an organized crime syndicate with high-ranking political connections.
The reason is, it's because he is part and parcel of the organized crime syndicates in South Africa, on government level and on the high-level police units. He's part and parcel, and therefore he gets a pass. He gets assisted and he gets looked after because he also plays a role and he does things for them.
Bolhe says the decision by the Ekurhuleni Council not to suspend Julius Mkhwanazi is laughable and that allowing him to take special leave should not have happened.
My professional opinion is that him and all these others that we've been discussing, all of them, any of them, should have been immediately suspended or fired if there's enough evidence and should have been on trial by now or in jail. Remember, if these guys is not dealt with severely, what does this say to our nation? The crime pays. We can commit crime and we can get away with it. So this is the biggest concern. Special leave, in my opinion, is laughable. It should never have been a special leave.
Meanwhile, the DA in Ekurhuleni, who have been pushing for Julius Mkhwanazi's suspension since 2023, say they believe that his decision to take special leave is to allow himself access to interfere with investigations and cover up his nefarious dealings.
If you put yourself on special leave, you can come back to the office to manage the situation. If you've been suspended, you must stay away from the office. So, according to me, there is he put himself on special leave to manage the whole situation and try to cover it up like he did the last so many years. We from the DS side continue with our quest for suspension, not just for protecting the integrity of the office, but also for the person. If he's not guilty, what he stated he is. It's protect him that there's independent investigations and that it's been done properly and let's get the outcome of it. You cannot have a situation where people might come and interfere into investigations. And our fear is by putting himself on special leave, he just might interfere in any investigation.
Action SA in Ekurhuleni says they are eagerly awaiting the report on the internal investigation, which is expected to be presented to council later this month.
Absolutely, it's concerning that most of the investigation, especially internal investigation, they take long. You know, if you don't get the right stakeholders to come and account, and it will drag for years. So, but we are quite excited because the report has been completed. And we will definitely get to the bottom of it as Action SA. But you know, our Brigadier Mkhwanazi has recused himself. You know, he took a leave just to allow the process to unfold. So it's really positioning the council, you know, to take some decisions or to also recommend certain recommendations on what is the next step.
IPED says they will not be commenting on the matter as a result of the president having instituted a commission to investigate allegations involving the police services, SAPS and MPS and other law enforcement agencies. Sasha Naidu, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, South Africa has put in place, or is talking about public-private partnership in order to help tackle unemployment.
Grant to meet. Since the launch of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention in 2020, over 230,000 workplace opportunities have been created. Through partnerships between government and the private sector, many young South Africans are gaining valuable skills through work placements. A partnership between Diageo Beverages and the University of Johannesburg is opening doors for youth in the hospitality sector. The initiative has been praised by Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training, Nomusa Dube Ncube.
What we are even excited about is that with our TVET colleges, our universities, as well as the community training colleges, such partnership as this ones allow our young people to go and learn or do experiential learning while they also understand what is needed by the industry. Because one of the challenges that we are facing, we have unemployed graduates. The reason why we have unemployed graduates is because we training not linked to what the industry want, not linked to what the economy wants of us to do as the country. So skilling and reskilling of our young people becomes very important.
General Manager of Diageo, Andrew Ross, says the private sector must play a key role in building a society where every young person can thrive.
Tourism is a massive opportunity for us to explode employment, to explode the contribution it makes to our economy and the growth of our economy. And so our commitment remains steadfast. But most importantly, when you hear these testimonies of the impact that you made, I spoke about a tick box exercise earlier. When you hear these young people stand up and say, I was unemployed. I'm now on a trainee management program. I'm a wine sommelier. Can you imagine from being unemployed a year ago? That really gives me the hope and the faith that what we are doing is making an impact.
The University of Johannesburg, through its Saul Kessner School of Hospitality, has helped create training employment opportunities for youth.
This is a brilliant opportunity for the youngsters. The industry by its nature demands that for employment to happen, the youngsters need to have practical skills. So the major benefits for this engagement with Diageo is that our graduates will leave the university and get extra opportunity to gain practical skills so they'll be employable. And also in the process, as you saw during the program, some of them, when we send them out to industry, they actually get permanent jobs, and then they can also gain skills to become entrepreneurs, which is very important.
For the beneficiaries, the initiatives offers a chance to gain real work experience.
To share my story and inspire other young people that might be in disadvantaged areas, I'd like to let them know that you are not your background. And there are plenty, plenty opportunities like the one that I took. You just need to grab that opportunity, show up and put your best foot forward, because once you do that, many other opportunities open and you can grab them and become anything you want to be in the world. So don't let anyone dim your light and dream big. The sky needs to be your start and not your limit.
To inspire future leaders, I would say that your circumstances do not define who you are. You are allowed to dream big and the sky is not the limit. As an African black woman, we are always taught to fight. Make sure that you take up space, because the future is not what it used to be.
The University of Johannesburg has enrolled over 100 young people this academic year as part of its contribution to the Youth Employment Service Initiative. Tsepo Ikaneng, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, Namwala farmers in Zambia have begun beef exports to DRC as Zambia eyes $1 billion US industry.
Zambia's export of beef to DRC is almost becoming a reality. The loading of these 25 cattle at Dodo Beef Compartment in Namwala signifies the actualization of the export of beef. The cattle are being transported to Kalomo for slaughter and onward delivery to DRC via Kasumbalesa border on the Copper Belt. Kelvin Puka, a beef farmer in Namwala, is excited with what is happening to transform the livestock sector in the country. We are very happy to have been selected as one of the beef compartments to participate in the export of beef to the DRC. We are happy because of the lucrative price we shall sell our beef cattle. The price offered will go a long way to create employment and improve livelihoods in our community. All the necessary procedures have been conducted to ensure the beef compartments and beef cattle are free of disease and meet international standards.
This compartment comprises of a quarantine and a lot of feedlots where animals are being raised in stages and will be packed, will be transported accordingly to the aggregator. As you can see, they are in prime and excellent condition. The body condition score, you can see. These animals could be weighing around 500 or so kgs, and they are all choice meat animals.
Once an idea, the export of beef is now becoming a reality and will transform the fortunes of the livestock sector. Reporting, Amachona Kasambala in Namwala, Southern Province.
Chinese investment drives Uganda's industrial transformation.
In 2024 alone, Uganda commissioned 8 multi-million dollar Chinese invested factories, marking a major milestone in the country's industrialization journey. One of the most transformative hubs is the Sino-Ugandan Mbale Industrial Park, which has become a beacon of progress since commissioning in 2018. Today, it employs over 11,000 Ugandans directly.
Right now, we have already created 11,000 jobs, and in the future, we are targeting to 20,000 jobs, even 30,000. And also, this is just one aspect also. You know, when we manufacture here, lots of raw materials we can buy from Uganda market, such as cotton.
Beyond employment, these industries are helping Uganda reduce its reliance on imports. Locally, manufactured goods are replacing foreign brands, boosting domestic production and strengthening the country's trade balance.
Before the coming of these factories, all these high quality products, they are all imported from abroad. Yes, but since they have come here, the price of these products right now is largely decreased, and also the quality of these products are guaranteed. So in the future, you don't need to worry about after sales service. Also, you can save lots of money compared with before.
As Uganda continues to attract foreign direct investment, the role of Chinese industries remains pivotal. These factories are not just building products, they are building Uganda's future.
The Chinese bring in the technology. Their technology amalgamates or meets the criteria for the various groups of consumers. They have low technology up to the sophisticated technology. And for that matter, we encourage our own domestic people to try to learn some of these things. For instance, we are now producing all the electricals in this country being produced by Ugandans working in Chinese industries. And they are learning so fast that we anticipate in the next 5 years we'll see a mushrooming trend of mushrooming industries that are emerging out of technology benefit from some of these Chinese.
From steel beams to textile threads, the impact of Chinese industries in Uganda is woven into the fabric of national development. And as the country looks ahead, this collaboration may be the key to unlocking even greater economic potential.
Meanwhile, child marriages continue to rise despite global efforts to curb the practice.
At just 15 years old, Milka, not her real name, from Malawi, has already endured what no child should ever face, an abusive marriage.
He would get drunk, then beat me. When the child protection group heard about it and began planning to intervene, they insisted I was still of school-going age. But by then, I had already dropped out of school when I got married.
When her husband learned that a team supported by Plan International was investigating the violence, he reacted with anger.
He chased me from his home when he heard about it. After that, I went back to my parents' house and decided to return to school.
Her story echoes across borders, from Asia to Africa and Latin America, a chorus of voices demanding to be heard. She's one of millions of girls around the world forced into marriage before adulthood, their childhood stolen by custom, poverty, or lawlessness.
In our region, for example, Ethiopia has a 40% prevalence. So that's an average prevalence. In some particular states, it's even higher. In Zambia, where I work, we have a 29% prevalence. One-third of girls are married before they are 18. So we also have a high prevalence in countries like Mozambique, which has 53% prevalence. So we see that the issue of child early forced marriages and unions is not going down.
Every year, an estimated 12 million girls are married before their 18th birthday. That is one girl every 3 seconds. In one of the largest studies of its kind, over 250 girls from 15 countries shared their stories with Plan International, stories that lay bare the pain of child bribes. Nearly half of the girls were married to older men, some decades older. For many, marriage was not their choice.
Many of them have no decision-making power when it comes to sexual and reproductive health rights. So they cannot decide how many children to have and at what point to have those children.
In most cases, poverty and social pressure drive child marriage. For parents struggling to survive, marrying off a daughter can ease the financial burden. Then there is conflict.
If you look at our region, there's a lot of conflict going on. If you talk about areas like Sudan, South Sudan, there's a lot of refugee populations going across all these countries. So there's a lot of desperation in those girls and looking for an escape of their current situation, such that anyone who seems to provide any relief to them is an opportunity to get out of that situation.
But despite the alarming situation, girls like 23-year-old Eman are rising to champion for the rights of girls in their communities.
The programs are currently in place to make it harder to marry children in our village. This has had a significant impact on girls in our society today.
Eman, who works in a refugee camp, says child marriage is not tradition, it's not protection. It's a violation. Enoch Sikolia, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Lagos hosts Africa's first electric power boat Grand Prix.
Lagoon hosted the latest race in the E1 series, the world's first all-electric powerboat racing championship. This marked the first Grand Prix in Africa. Teams competed in battery-powered hydrofoil boats known as RESBUDs, designed to lift above the water's surface to minimize drag and reduce emissions.
Lagos is very important to us. From the very first time we were interacting with the local stakeholders, we understood the energy, the drive for a change, the drive for an evolution, and how much this city cares about the future in terms of sustainability, tourism, technology, and so on.
9 teams are competing in the 2025 season, many backed by international celebrities, including African football legend Didier Drogba, tennis great Rafael Nadal, and NBA superstar LeBron James.
Their reach is compelling, and at the stage of the organization, having the followership through them that we can see from our KPIs is an amazing opportunity, and this is like an insurance for the growth of the championship in the near future.
Team Brazil, sponsored by the Clara Group, emerged the winner ahead of Team Blue Rising, backed by India cricket superstar Virat Kohli, and Team Drogba Global Africa.
We just had a really good weekend. It all came together. The water's really good for us here. It suits our boat and our drivers. So, yeah, big team effort all around.
The new sport has also been embraced by Lagos residents.
It's amazing to see that Lagosians can enjoy this type of sport. And Lagos State is doing a fantastic job at enhancing this side of tourism in Lagos, Nigeria. And I mean, a lot of people turned up and it's fun.
Lagos is the sixth city to host the E1 Championship this year, after stops in Jeddah, Doha, and Monaco. The season is set to conclude in Miami next month. Mohammed Abubakar, CGTN.
Nigeria sports analyst breaks down Africa's 2026 World Cup qualifiers.
Well, the African 2026 FIFA World Cup qualifiers enter the last day on Sunday with some key fixtures lined up. Zambia hosts Niger in a Group E clash that Niger will be trying to win in order to fight for playoff spots for teams finishing second in the groups. In Group I, Mali will be hosting Madagascar, who still have a slim chance of qualifying if other results go their way. Egypt, who have already qualified, will be hosting Equatorial Guinea in what will be more of a celebration of the Egyptians' qualification to the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Well, to digest the recent developments as the Africa 2026 World Cup qualifiers come to a close, we're now joined live from Lagos, Nigeria, by a friend of the show, Onyinyechi Ogu Ogbaro. Onyinyechi, welcome back to our program. And to start us off, North African teams have already grabbed 4 of the 9 African tickets to the World Cup next year. Where does this leave the wider picture of African football?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back on the show. Yes, the North African teams have been able to show other African sides, the East, West and Southern sides, how it is done, leaving them to just fight out their tickets at the tail end of this qualifiers. It's not a fluke that we have Morocco picking up their ticket first as the first African side to pick up the ticket for the 2026 World Cup. They have been able to show that their performance at the 2022 World Cup was never a fluke. Finishing fourth at that competition, they're ready to do more. They're ready to make a statement once again. Followed suit by Tunisia, who had a clean run in this qualifiers. We could see that Tunisia had a great run and trying to pick up from their domestic side, their great domestic sides, with a crop of players that are making the Tunisian side. Egypt also under Hassan Hassan. Yes, Hassan Hassan has proven to the Egyptians that he can handle this team. They've been able to show some defensive coordination and attacking flair. Mohamed Salah having to create that record as the most scoring African in the qualifiers, beating off that of Didier Drogba. That's evidence there coming from Egypt and how they were able to book their ticket. For Algeria, the final North African side that picked their ticket, they will be returning to this competition since 2014. Now, Algeria has been able to go back into the local room and then dot the I's, cross the T's, making sure that they get back on track to make an appearance at the global showpiece. So picking up the ticket, which they would have done a very long time ago, but because of the group that they have been pitted in, it's a very strong side. But they have been able to complete the 4 North African sides. Now, these sides have something in common. They have a great domestic league, and that's a great foundation for dominance on the continent. You could see that they always dominate the CAF Confederation Cup, the CAF Champions League, all from North African sides. And we could see the dividend from the qualifying rounds. But what I would say, what I'm concerned about right now is the impact that these sides will make, even after picking your ticket for so quickly. in the 2026 qualifying competition, the impacts that they're going to make in North America when USA, Mexico and Canada host this competition.
Right. Let's head to your neck of the woods now, Onyenyechi. The fate of the Super Eagles is now seemingly out of their hands. In brief, where did the mighty Nigeria, country that has, of course, produced the last two African Player of the Years, get it wrong this time?
I think they did a lot of things wrong. Yes, I'm a patriotic Nigerian, but I have to say it. I have to call a spade a spade. They did a lot of things wrong, starting up from the handling of the team. We had three coaches, you know, tutored his team in this qualifying round. We had Joseph Osiero, even after coming off the silver medal from the 2023 African Cup of Nations, then Finidi George, and now Eric Schell. So three coaches tutoring the sides during this qualifying windows. And we've not been able to take advantage of some home matches. We drew some matches that we should have won. The match against Lesotho, the match against Zimbabwe, we should have.
Meanwhile, President Rajoelina warns of coup as soldiers join a Madagascar protests.
We turn to Madagascar, where President Andry Rajoelina has said an attempt to seize power illegally and by force is underway in the country. This comes as a faction of soldiers joined thousands of anti-government protesters in the capital. Soldiers based in the outskirts of Antananarivo called on security units to join forces and refuse orders to shoot, rejecting the crackdown on youth-led protests that have hit the Indian Ocean island for more than 2 weeks. The protest was sparked by water and power shortages that have grown into calls for President Rajoelina's resignation. Newly appointed Prime Minister Rufin Rafisambo has said the government remains firm and is ready to collaborate and listen to all forces. Well, let's now bring in Luke Freeman in the capital, Antananarivo. Luke, an army unit says it has taken control of military forces in the country. What can you tell us about the latest developments there?
So, for the last 2 weeks, there have been protests on the streets of Madagascar about the water and electricity situation, which is very, very bad for ordinary Malagasy people living here. That is to say, power cuts of up to 12 hours a day, sometimes more, water only coming on at night, in the street stand pumps where people have to queue. And that's created a situation where the young people of Madagascar, the Generation Z, as they call themselves, have come onto the street and have daily been protesting, asking for their, what they call their basic human rights to water, electricity, and a good education should be respected by the government. After 2 weeks of protests being pushed back by the military police, there was finally an intervention from the army yesterday, who basically sided with the protesters and said to we're behind you in the interests of resolving this crisis here in Madagascar.
So, Luke, how is the situation today in the capital, Antananarivo?
The situation today is calm. It was noteworthy that when the military came into the city, followed by a crowd of jubilant protesters yesterday, the military police, who had been keeping the protesters out of the city centre, disappeared and allowed the army and the people to come in and protest in the central square of Madagascar, which has historic significance of previous popular revolts, particularly a youth uprising in 1972, after which the square of May the 13th is named. So today, things are calm. On the whole, the people went home quietly last night, having been reassured by the army that things were now under control, that there would be a process of dialogue to take the country forward, and there will be a church service in the city centre this morning, followed by a march from the young people coming in. It all looks fairly peaceful. The different factions of the military and the army.
With that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Eloise Shimi, and stay tuned for other programs, especially the Home Run Show, which is coming up right after the Onkona Nadingi at 16:30 with Dwight and Helmut. And after that, the business economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 Hours. Now from Indafa, happy Shishu, it is goodbye. Enjoy the rest of your Monday afternoon.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.2. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Omutiha with the Kirakaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafasana, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shivikamoshiwana, E. Moyao, or Tango Gotisamwene, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Oronjika. Seisanina, Omeguro, Niranitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupitramo, Eagle FM Media House. Gwe 20 Pimeha, Uka Kombanga Nena. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma, onoraje tatuimu. Datu heari jamano tano, oniaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.